Blog Talk Radio.
Rivetti, what's up?
I'm sorry, sir. It's just a difference of opinion that got out of hand.
What about?
It's really too silly to talk about, sir. I'd rather just forget about it.
I don't give a damn about what you'd rather forget about. Why were you two fighting?
Well, I said that the Kirby Silver Surfer was the only real Silver Surfer, and that the Mobius Silver Surfer was shit. And Benefield's a big Mobius fan, and things got out of hand. I pushed him, he pushed me. I lost my head, sir. I'm sorry.
Rivetti, you're a supervisor. You can get a commission like that.
I know it, sir. You're 100% right. It's never happened again.
It better not happen again. I see this kind of nonsense, I'm going to write you up. You understand? Do you understand?
Yes, sir.
You have to set an example even in the face of stupidity. Now, everybody that reads comic books knows that Kirby Silver Surfer is the only true Silver Surfer. Now, am I right or wrong?
You're right, sir.
All right. Get out of here.
Yes, sir.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane.
No, it's Max, Darrow, and D-Bert, your host for the Comic Shop Show.
Howdy, folks. Salutations, crumpets, and all that jazz. This is your host, D-Bert, a.k.a. the Afro-Nerd. And again, this is a Saturday, and I think we're going to stay here now, Saturday edition of the Grindhouse double feature where we have two shows, two of your favorite shows. Number one, The Comic Shop. Number two, Afro-Nerd featuring Captain Kirk, a.k.a. Afro-Nerd Radio. I suspect that one of our crew members, the indefatigable Daryl B., is not with us. He might have actually lost the email or the memo or the mentioning that we were going to start broadcasting on Saturdays. Nevertheless, the captain and myself will shore it up. We'll do the damn thing. And I'm sure that Mr. B will be in at some point, perhaps the next show. He might show up in a few moments. I don't know. Nevertheless, we've got to go to a quick nerdcore groove. Actually, this is a nerdcore funk special. This is I Am Superman. I'm pretty sure that he's probably listening on the intercom, the great captain. This is the late, great Roger Troutman. I Am Superman. We'll be back in a few moments. And you know what? Let's groove.
I can see through you, girl. I'm Superman.
Okay. You know what? It's unfortunate that that gentleman, again, Roger Troutman, that he lost his life in a pretty weird, funky way. It might have been an altercation with his brother. He found, I think his brother and himself, of course, both of them died under mysterious circumstances. Maybe they might have killed each other. It's still, I think, up in the air. But he's definitely a contemporary of Prince. Talented. If you remember the California, what was it, California Love that that Dre and Tupac performed like 15 years ago? He was on that video. He performed in that thing. So it's pretty cool to find that gem, I Am Superman. All right, folks, listen. The Grindhouse Edition, the comic shop with Daryl B. persona non grata, at least I think so. But we'll still keep it going. First up, let's get to the captain. Captain, it's your time. Let's get to it.
I actually like that song. I like that song a lot more than I actually like the character of Superman. And I'll tell you something else. If the movie is half as good as that song that we just heard, the Superman franchise will do very well this summer.
You know what? It would be cool if they actually looked. Yeah, I mean, you know, listen, I don't know if they're that forward-thinking. Maybe they are, but it would be cool to actually use that in some kind of way. You know, some jam. I mean, there's been a number of jams out there that have used Superman as a reference. Johnny Guitar Watson had Superman Lover and that whole thing. I mean, you would figure they might interject that kind of stuff just to be, you know, cute and funky. I don't know. Ladies and gentlemen, the call-in number is 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. Quite a few things happened this week. I really want to get to it in the world of pulp fiction, pulp culture, pop culture. Let's say pop/pulp culture. Number one, legendary film critic, and it really just a really, oh, wow, just an icon, really. Roger Ebert passed, and unfortunately, I think it might have been just a matter of time. I mean, he was really, really fighting it. I mean, Mr. Ebert, I believe he just shy of 70 years of age, 70, 71, journalist, film critic, most known for working with the Chicago Sun-Times. I think actually he worked at the Chicago Sun-Times for the last 40-some-odd years, from 67 until his death. So he was working. But his partner, I mean, he's also known for the Roger Siskel and Ebert show, which was about film critique. Two thumbs up, two thumbs down, that whole thing. Siskel died, I think, in 99, and that was a pretty big blow to the entertainment industry. And and Ebert, all of a sudden, he had all these cancers, man. You know, cancer of the thyroid, cancer of the salivary glands. I think he had some surgical complications, and then part of his lower jaw had to be removed. And he really couldn't speak anymore, but he was still fighting the fight, still writing. You know, but he was an iconic, really, I think, probably the number one film critic in the country. I mean, when you think about film critique, Roger Ebert is almost synonymous with that. I mean, there are others who can do it, others that have some notoriety, but I think they were really chasing on the heels of Roger Ebert. So I think that the entertainment world, as well as the world of journalism, has definitely lost a big one. Any thoughts on Roger Ebert? I mean, he's so ubiquitous, Captain. I mean, he's really touched everyone in some way.
Well, that's what you call critic supremo. That's what we had pretty much at the highest level. He put the C in the word. And that's just the reality of it. Now, there's something that we always talk about on the show here. When someone passes on, who takes over to fill those shoes? Now, there's a lot of critics out there at this modern day at this given time. There's a lot of them now. Going way back, going years ago, just as you mentioned, you know, his years of work and everything, we didn't know about a lot of critics. So he more or less blew open the door, him and Siskel. do open the door for a lot of critics. Now, who takes over to do it at that level? Doing it at that level is very important. It's not just these satellite individuals that you have. You need to have someone who's the big planet and the smaller satellites to revolve around them, just as the moon revolves around the Earth. You need to have the big planet. Who fills that void? And that's always very important. There's going to be a void at this given point. Even though, you know, during his last days he slowed down and everything else, it's still a huge void at this given point that needs to be filled. That's what I'm interested in seeing. Someone has to come forward. Someone has to step up. And also, the media has to feel that this person stepping up is the right person to fill those shoes. And those shoes are huge. Huge, 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 huge. That's all I have to say about it. It's very important. Very important.
Yeah, Richard Roper has taken over his slot. I think he took over the slot on the show a few years ago. And he's one of note. Rex Reed, I think he's probably around the same age as as Ebert. I really haven't heard from him in a few years, but I think he's still kind of toiling around. But there's a few guys. There's another gentleman, kind of a wacky guy. Now I can't remember his name. He was pretty notable too. What's his name? Gene also, Captain.
Yes.
Glasses, kind of a Jew, quote unquote Jufro, as they say. I say colloquially, not to be, you know, that's what has been put out there. I can't remember his name right now, but he's a well-known critic as well. So you have a few guys floating around, but someone to really put it down, in my estimation, was someone someone you would actually read his column and take note. Not everyone you would necessarily lean on for an opinion for a film, but I think this guy had so much weight and so much knowledge, and also, heck, he was so well respected in the industry. I mean, he's also a screenwriter as well, but so well respected in the industry that there's quite a few DVDs where he guests on to explain the history of the movie. So it's almost there's definitely a cachet for someone, especially if it was a film that might be considered like one of America's, you know, greatest films, that kind of thing. He would show up to give you the history on it on a Blu-ray or on a DVD or just a regular DVD. So that goes to show you how much power he had, how much respect he had, and it's unfortunate that, you know, that he died the way that he did, because it literally appeared that his body was eating, he was eating himself away, or rather his body was eating away, just a really horrific way to go. Another great individual, another icon actually in pop culture, Carmine Infantino, died actually the same day, April 4th, as Mr. Ebert. Now, for those who are not knowledgeable about Carmine Infantino, now I'm pretty sure those who are really into comic book collecting, there's no way you would not know Carmine Infantino, especially if you were collecting comic books in the 80s. I should say 60s through 80s. I'm talking about myself, like by the 80s. But when I was collecting comics in the 80s as a kid, you open up these books and, you know, you see the certain names that are repeating constantly over and over again. Carmine Infantino, of course you see Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, you know, just a number of names that just were synonymous with Marvel and DC Comics. And Carmine Infantino was one of them. Now, in my case, Carmine Infantino was I got a lot of burn with my reading time, because I started out, now people know I am a Batman stan now, but I started out as a Speedster fan. I was a Flash fan. Flash was the first comic book that I picked up. I remember the day because Mr. Starks was there. And I don't know if he will give me the credit. I mean, I will give him the credit that he introduced me into comic books. I don't know if he will give me the credit that that together we took it to another level, getting boards, getting boxes, getting Mylar bags and all that kind of thing. I mean, going into – because when I saw his comic books – now, I have to talk to him about this. When I saw his comic books, his books were in this crumpled-up bag, and they were in horrible shape. And I – They were not. Now today, if you look at his collection, it's you know, the collection looks mint. Everything's beautiful, white, you know, white cardboard boxes, Captain. Everything is, you know, taped up, protected. When I first saw the books, they were not that way.
He's gonna say it wasn't true. Wasn't true.
Well, I remember it because, you know, you remember things that you are about. You may not be able to remember everything, but some things you do remember. Like certain, I kind of, if you're into football, you know how this goes. Certain things that you're into, you remember the moment that you were introduced to it. I'm sure, especially Starks being a fan of hip hop and turntablism, he could tell you the first time he discovered hip hop. He knows. The first day I discovered comic books was in his house, and I looked at the bottom of his bag. For some reason, I was curious about this bag. It was a bag full of comic books, but they were in horrible shape. And the first book I pulled up was a Flash book. And I thumbed through the book, and I don't know what happened, but something about the way that it looked, the storyline, the character. I love speed. At that time, I could run kind of fast. So I just the whole concept of speed and that Flash specifically was a police scientist. They didn't say CSI back then also. He was a police scientist. Today, it dawns on you, oh, wait a minute, he was really CSI. Anyway, so he was a high-functioning speedster. And I called into that, and Carmine Infantino did a lot of those books. He was closely affiliated with the Flash. Actually, the Flash coming back into prominence as a Silver Age hero. We know the original Flash, the Jay Garrick Flash, and I'm going insider somewhat, but before the Flash that you know today in the red costume, the Barry Allen police scientist Flash, that's the Silver Age Flash. But the Flash from the 40s, was a Flash that looked very reminiscent of Mercury or Hermes. With the helmet and everything and the wings on the side. When the Golden Age met its demise, the comic books were selling in the millions from the 30s through the 40s. But at some point, there was some critique. We know about The Seduction of the Innocent, Captain, the famous book by Frederick Wortham. Frederick Wortham was this psychiatrist that deemed that comic books were causing teenage delinquency,
Yes.
And there were famous hearings, government hearings, congressional hearings, and these books were going through a hard time. They went from selling in the millions to maybe half that much, or maybe a third of that much at some point. They started to die down. So when comic books received a renaissance or experienced a renaissance, it was because of Carmine Infantino's work on Showcase. Showcase introduced the new Flash. Flash is the linchpin for reintroducing all these new characters. You had Green Lantern before. You had Flash before. You had Wonder Woman before. You had all these other characters before. But around 1956, going into the 60s, that heralded the Silver Age. So really, Carmine Infantino was the main artist and editor, the main focal point for the Silver Age of comic books. So he's the father of the Silver Age, and when you think about what that means, it's a direct DNA for what we see, for the popularity that we see today, because it was the Renaissance that brought the superhero back into the modern age, and also it brought him back, because all these heroes, even if you include Marvel in this, Captain, that's what everything, all these heroes ended up getting powers through, atomic powers. This is after World War II, so everything ended up being atomic-related, very modern, scientific, science fiction. It was a lot more science fiction-oriented post-Silver Age than it was post-Golden Age. It was a little bit of it that was there in the Golden Age, but it really hit its stride with the look and the texture and the storytelling was very much a modern thing. And that leads up to where we are today. So Carmine Infantino, I'm mad. You know, it hits me hard because, honestly, his name is synonymous with my introduction to the comic books. Any thoughts,
Captain? And the writing at the time, in my opinion, was very, very tight because it made a lot of sense. Just as you said, Atomic, you know, coming from, you know, everything dealing with from the
issues,
yeah, World War II and everything else, nuclear reactors, and it just made sense. Now, my experience, this is interesting, because I had a Flash versus Superman comic, and I think that was a 1967 comic. But it's interesting how I got a hold of it, because I traded for it. I had a Marvel What If comic. I believe it was What If Spider-Man Joined the Avengers. And this particular individual, he was so intrigued with the comic. He was like, oh, I'll trade you for this, I'll trade for this, you know. And then I saw that comic, Flash versus Superman, in the foot race. And I said, give me this. And then he was like, oh, okay, no problem. Now, of course, that was a much older comic than the What If comic. But for whatever reason, and this is what happens sometimes, you go years ago, not like now. Pretty much now, everyone knows what's going on. You're not going to be able to pull those type of deeds circa 2013 on anybody who pretty much has comics. But years ago, going back in the 80s and the 70s, you could pull those type of things. Like, oh, I got them on this one. So I traded for the comic, and I was like, oh, well, this is really interesting, you know? And that's how I really got introduced to Flash, because I was not really into DC at all. You know, we were Marvel guys. Marvel was, we were strictly Marvel individuals. You know, and that's how I got introduced. And he was the writer of that comic book. And the writing was excellent. It made a lot of sense. Sometimes when you read these things today, you're looking at it, it's just, I understand they have to just keep everything going. And, you know, they want to bring in new readers and everything else. But a lot of it is just a money grab. In those days, you were just writing the comic book more or less, even though it made a lot of money, you were still writing from the love and what made sense. You weren't looking, as I always say, chasing the art. All right? The art dictated the money instead of the money dictating the art. So that's all. Back over to you, Sir Afrinor. We have a call.
It appears that just as there is an Incredible Hulk, there is an indefatigable Daryl B, who I think has actually decided to show up. Let me check.
You know, someone has to alert me 3 hours before, more than 3 hours before time, that we're doing a show on Saturday. That's all
your
I'm going to say.
Your opinion is wrong.
Because you're lucky that I left the WrestleMania fan access early, or else I wouldn't have shown up. Hi, folks.
Well, it's good to have you, sir.
It's good to have you, man. My bad. Listen,
uh-huh.
Man, I'm glad that you're here, obviously. Carmine Infantino, man, what's the deal?
What's the deal is we spoke all about turmoil at DC. Turmoil at DC. The last couple of shows, we have talked about how writers and editorial people at DC couldn't get their stuff together, how everything is broken up. This was one of the guys that in DC for the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, when you said DC, you said good writing or good editorial or a guy that could set up a good story, Mr. Infantino, that was the guy. That was one of the guys, guaranteed he would be mentioned in the top five. So just as everything is falling apart at DC, they lose one of their legends. And I grew up on stories with him, through JLA, through Batman, through Flash, and it wasn't stories about superhuman powers. It wasn't stories about good guys and villains. You can argue, he is the archetype for all of the deconstruction of superheroes that have been happening today. Because he was one of the first to bring the icons to street level, where they weren't gods, where they weren't so far above men. You know, he made Flash like an everyday guy. He made Green Lantern. He was one of the guys that edited Denny O'Neil on his Green Lantern, Green Arrow run. You know, Infantino is going to be missed. That simply said, you're only going to get one a guy like him once in a while. Back over to you.
Yeah, I mean, you said it best, man. I mean, it really hurts, you know, because the more these guys are close to your own personal experience of comic collecting, the more it hits you. And I was just telling the captain that my first memory of comic collecting is tied to Carmine Infantino. When I picked up my first comic book was a Flash comic book because I picked up from Mr. Starks. I mean, I was just entranced with that character. Speed and intelligence just gets me. Now I transfer to the Batman. But Flash always, the speed always has a thing with me. Never was into strength, never was into, you know, being able to stretch or whatever, elasticity, but speed was a thing. And Carmine Infantino, heck, he even was responsible for the first Nova, isn't that correct?
Yes, he was.
He was behind that. And even then, because I thought Nova, especially Nova, in the Bronze Age Nova, there was, you know, they always talked about him having Nova speed. I think Infantino was into that too because there's a panel. I got to get this book. I know I have it, but I'm too lazy to search through like my 50,000 comics, literally. But that's how bad it is, folks. I buy a book over again because I don't feel like looking for it. Anyway, there's an issue of Nova that Infantino was behind, and on occasion these characters would poke fun at the other guy. I distinctly remember there was a panel where you see Barry having a discussion with a person named Wally in a Marvel Nova book, a redheaded kid and a blonde kid, blonde adult. And they were talking, they were in the background, said, okay, wait a minute, why did he do that? In a book that discusses speed in Marvel. So Infantino has, you know, it's a shame. It's
well,
87 years of age, and these, you know, these icons, the ones that really started the whole thing, they're dying off.
Well, I didn't think you were going to go with that story. Everybody knows how big a Squadron Supreme / Supreme Power fan Afro Nerd is. He brings it up on the show all the time. Well, let me let you in behind the curtain. That was born out of, in the 80s, they wanted to do a Justice League Avengers crossover. All right? That fell through. Surprise, surprise. So, Gruenwald, before he did his Squadron Supreme opus, the two people he went to ask permission was Julie Swartz and Carmine Infantino. Julie Swartz famously said, I don't know about this, but Infantino went, you know what? Go for it. Let's see what you got. Do it. I have no problem with that because Infantino didn't care what the project was as long as it was a good story with good writing. That's what he wanted. He wanted a good story. He wanted people to think and be entertained at the same time. All right? It wasn't just, all right, we want big explosion. He usually go back to with each of his books you read, and you'll find a hidden message other than the slug fights and everything. And again, like I said, that's why he's going to be missed.
Yeah, you know, I see Cabino Man, our friend who's a supporter, I guess, I hope, and he's saying some things okay, here we go. He's going off the rails here. He's saying, Flash should have been a black guy because black people are fast. It only makes sense.
Thank you. Okay.
I don't know about that. Yeah. Hey, listen. Well, you know what? They have a black Flash. Daryl mentioned it. He called Blur. Did they ever bring him back?
Did you hear the new one? They're going to introduce a black speeder into the Flash books and then naming him Sprint. Yeah.
What about the other guy that's from the past that's in there? He came out of the Speed Force. What's his name?
Turbine. Max Mercury. Let's see, going through all my Speed Force guys. But that's part of my problem with the DC 52, man. It's kind of a slap in the face.
let me correct the gentleman, Covino Man, because he's saying the Flash was more clowning where Quicksilver was serious. That's not the case. You're talking about the Flash from the cartoons, okay? And even then, it depends what cartoon you're talking about. You're talking about the cartoons from the 60s, which is available on DVD, that run. That was a pretty serious Silver Age version of the Flash. And the comic books, even Wally West really wasn't a clown, not in the comics.
Well, nope.
certainly not Barry Allen. Barry Allen was a CSI.
Yeah, Barry Allen's always been serious. If we're talking clown flashes, the early run of Wally, yeah, they played that up for laughs. But after Wally got taken over by Mark Waid and Grant Morrison, and then later with Jeff Johns, and now Francis Madripoel, you know, the Flash stories have been pretty serious. They try to keep a humorous edge, but we've seen the writers take them over to a little bit of the dark side. And again, I say, that was framework laid down by Mr. Infantino because he was one of the guys to explore that Flash, Barry Allen, wasn't just the guy who ran fast. He was serious, but as he got faster, he slowed down to keep his connections to family, to friends, to teammates, you know? And that was interesting because here you have the fastest man alive, and he's the glue that held a lot of this together.
Yeah, one other thing,
that was
too.
Deep, by the way.
Before we go to a quick musical break, a third, you know, they always say that people die in threes. George Glatter, who was connected with Sabrina the Teenage Witch and Archie's comics. He's one of the older guard. These guys, 1925, just as Carmine Infantino. You know, they're in the 80s now. Now we're going to start seeing this. Unfortunately, that you know, they're starting to die on us. But I was really never a big Archie person. Here and there, I admit, as a little kid. Just like Charles Schultz, well, I'm probably more of a Charles Schultz fan, definitely, than an Archie's fan. But I like comics. So in later years, I will collect a lot of things that you wouldn't think I would collect. But listen, Sabrina the Teenage Witch had a lot of crossover appeal, actually, if you think about it. So that's probably
TV shows and movies.
TV shows. Yeah. So I mean, that's why. You know, it's funny how you think about it. These guys collect these things, and they're, you know, they're pulp. It's on paper. It's no big deal. Next thing you know, movies and games and all kinds of things come out of it. So, you know, the intellectual property, the creativity these guys come up with, not to be, you know, you just can't scoff at stuff. It's amazing when people, you know, years ago, Superman was laughed at. When you think of Siegel and Schuster as young men trying to promote this weird thing called Superman, and doors are being closed. Now it's a billion-dollar idea. Superman is a billion-dollar idea by two Jewish kids that people just laughed at and discarded. The stuff probably goes on to this day. No, I wouldn't doubt. Things like this still go on. People have genius ideas, and no, we don't get it, and they close the door on you. That's why these stories teach you, you must persevere, ladies and gentlemen. You must persevere. Never let someone tell you your idea is crap because they don't know. I tell you that right now. They don't know. Can you imagine, Darryl, that because I was looking at, I think I might even sent this to you guys, the DC history of DC Comics on DVD?
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's you know, it goes through the story again of the actual development of DC Comics, and it's kind of a lurid history as I'm not going to go into it now, but it's a pretty fascinating and lurid history as to how these books did not start out as books for kids per se. Or I should say the creators of it. But the reason why I'm bringing it up is these kids were shopping this Superman idea, and they're getting doors closed on them. They don't get it. This is going nowhere. Do something else. And it goes to my mind that people do not know what the hell they're talking about consistently. consistently.
It just goes to show that if there's a misconception or a stereotype that is ingrained to people, and the idea of pulp magazines / comic books from the 18th, 19th century, you know, like the Wild West. Remember, there was comics in the Wild West, folks, all right? But they were considered, outlandish, kiddie, even back then, considered that. So these guys go shopping Superman around, and people got that idea ingrained in them, stuck in their head. And then fast forward today, Superman is a billion-dollar industry. Batman is a billion-dollar industry. Comics could be a billion-dollar industry again, and once was a multi-billion-dollar industry. That you never know. You have to have an open mind when it comes, as long as the idea is feasible. Notice I threw in feasible, because let's face it, we also got crackpots out there with ideas about what's humorous and stuff that will offend like 75% of the nation if it ever comes out. Back to you, Afriner.
Yeah, I just think it's just a lesson now. You just can't be too quick to label somebody crazy or because you don't understand their idea. You got to give them at least a decent hearing to say, okay, you know what? Let's see what we can do. All right, listen. Let's go to a quick groove. We'll be back. I want to ask about your favorite comic book covers. Your favorite comic book covers, the ones that kind of stick in your craw. Modern age, digital age, what have you. All right. This is Popeye the Sailor Man. Redo, face to face. We'll be back in a few moments.
Popeye the Sailor Man, I'm
All right, folks, kind of a humorous redo there. Again, that was face-to-face performing I'm Popeye the Sailor Man, believe it or not, even in a new, I guess, modern age group. You know, speaking of Popeye, has there been talk about they're trying to bring that back, that they're trying to bring that back, perhaps? I mean, we know, I think 1980 was a Robin Williams film. Is there a new cartoon or is there a new film coming out, Daryl?
No, there's always talk about a project involving Popeye and stuff like that. The problem is it's one of the characters that's so wrapped up in chitzy, you know, humorous, corny type stuff that they don't know the proper platform to truly bring him back in. That's face facts. There's some characters that are so wrapped in cheesiness that it's hard to
Modernize them.
To modernize them, and Popeye's one of those, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But well, think about it. You modernize Popeye, should I use the word steroids?
Yeah, maybe.
You modernize Popeye, should I use the word roid rage?
Well, listen,
you know?
somehow they modernized Looney Tunes, and they're getting like millions of viewers a week. You know, somehow they did it. It gave it some kind of Seinfeld-esque vibe, and I kind of dig the new Looney Tunes, to be honest with you. I know the captain doesn't care for it because of the iconic history, the past, some things you don't mess around with, but for some reason, I just like this version of it. Lola Bunny is hilarious.
She's also could be considered a stalker.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it has a little darkness to it somewhat, but I mean, it's I don't know.
I think Popeye would like, though. I think Popeye would like. You know, this is something. I don't know if they would still use spinach, but you have to use spinach. That's what you're supposed to use, right?
Yeah, you have to.
You have to.
We'll find out.
I'm kind of intrigued about it. Actually,
we'll find out.
I can kind of go for it.
We'll find out the spinach was specially treated with a thing that had a cow steroid in it, and that's what causes his reaction to. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Listen.
Good luck, whoever's trying to re-update this one, because this will be
you
good.
You never know. Well, they were trying to bring back Hong Kong Fooey with Eddie Murphy. They'll do it now. They will do it. Money is a great motivator. You know.
Yeah, but they were trying to make that live action. How are you going to make a four-foot talking dog that walks on its hind quarters live action to work as a janitor? And, it's Hong Kong Fooey. We don't know who he is. Well, there's only one walking, talking dog in the whole city, and he's got a ninja suit on. I think that's the janitor.
You have to suspend belief, sir. You know. All right, listen, quickly, let's talk about iconic comic book covers. I don't think we ever actually covered this before. And I thought about it that, you know, these books, speaking of Carmine Infantino, the one book that I actually was able to get at a comic book convention years ago when I was a kid was the Flash 123, which is a Carmine Infantino book, and it's the Flash of two worlds. And that book right there, once again, you know, I talked about Daryl, the Showcase comic from 1956 that introduced the modern Flash. In a way, Flash is the linchpin to the modern age for DC, because in this book, introduced a whole continuity fiasco we're dealing with right now. The reason why we have a DC 52 is directly connected to this Flash comic book right here. Because now this Flash comic right here dealt with the idea of how do we bring back the Golden Age heroes. I mentioned the Jay Garrick Flash from the 40s. How do we reintroduce that character to go along with this new Flash? And they figured out how to do it with this whole concept of different Earths, different dimensions, science fiction at its best. This is what really makes Infantino, referencing him again, a genius in the sense of how you introduce all this new characterization, this new modern age, the Silver Age. This is what essentially is the line between the Golden Age and the Silver Age. When you talk about this whole modern interpretation of comic books, and that one cover right there is a cover that is just iconic. I think there's even a statue that they made that's based on that cover that you can purchase. That's one. What cover comes to your mind, Captain?
Well, actually, it's two of them. It's two of them. You have that, I believe it's X-Men 100, the 25 cents comic, when they were both teams were ready to face off with each other. That cover sticks in my mind. You know, I felt that was very iconic. It just playing over and over in my head, that cover. And also, of course, you know, Action Comics, when they first introduced Superman, when he's there picking up the car and he's throwing it. You know, I got to really touch that comic book at the comic book convention last year. So, you know, that was really big. I think that's an iconic cover. Those two, those are the ones that stick in my head.
Daryl?
I'll say this. The current age, the last 25 years, have killed the iconic cover for me. Because every time you get one cover, you got 24 variants, you know, and all of that. But I got a couple that are well-known that everybody keeps on copying to this day. I love the Amazing Spider-Man cover where he's just walking away from the trash bin and the Spidey suit is hanging out from it. But that's been killed to death. I also like, and people are going to laugh at this, I like the 400 Amazing Spider-Man cover, all right, with the tombstone. Here lies, and it gives you a pause, and embossed on the tombstone is the picture of Spider-Man. And you're like, wait, what? And that comic's famous because it had the death of Aunt May, which Marvel proceeded to tramp all over, which was a very defining moment. And I dare anybody to read that scene on top of the Empire State Building and not have a tear to their eye as Pete and Aunt May have that final talk. I just look at it this way. Speculation and money grabs have killed the art of the cover for me, because I hate picking up a book where the cover looks awesome and then I look on the inside and the art's trash. I hate picking up a book where I have to pick it up and flip to find out if I have the book or not, because it's another cover of the same book that I picked up already. You know, I just look at it as, all right, iconic covers are usually one of a kind that get copied later on down the line. But what iconic cover has come out recently that you want? Because every time you think of a cover that's come out, you got to ask, well, was that number 1A, number 1B, number 1C, the limited edition, the second printing? Stop. Stop the madness, comic book. Stop the madness. Back to you, Afro-Nerd.
Yeah, you know, that is something to think about. I mean, the variant thing, it's all about it is about a money grab. It's probably a last vestige of trying to hold on to people who are still collecting
for
comic
collecting.
Books. They're still collecting comics that way because they're really pushing. You know, I don't even know. I mean, I think we might have discussed this before. If this age that we're in now, if this is considered the digital age, you know, when we talk about downloads and comicsology.com and all these ways of actually getting comic books digitally, is that the age that we are in now? Because, you know, if you talk about the Golden Age, the Silver Age, the Modern Age, the Bronze Age is in the 70s. So you have all these different segments in comic book collecting, all these different eras. But what where are we now? I'm led to believe this is the digital age. It makes sense, I think. I don't know what age we're in right now. But another comic book cover that I can think of that has a lot of importance, especially with this upcoming X-Men comic book, I'm sorry, X-Men movie, is X-Men 141. That's the issue that was the whole deal with Future Past, which is what we're going to see eventually, I guess. Well, we see an older Kitty Pryde, an older Wolverine, and in the backdrop, you see these fallen heroes as a poster. They, you know, either they can't be found, or they're apprehended, or they're slain. So that cover is iconic. But it does make you wonder, are there any iconic covers today that you can think of, like, wow, you know, last month, last year, a couple of years ago, that cover really did it. Have we seen the last of the iconic Cobra cover?
Essentially, yes, because they flooded the market. The reason why these the ones we remember are so iconic was because at the time that was the one cover, and that's what pulled you in and sucked you in. If you are a non-comic book reader or you didn't read that specific line, you saw the, that looks interesting, and let me look in it. And usually the art inside matched the cover outside, and it either pulled you in or, this book sucks, but you know what? I love this cover. Let me save it because of the cover. You don't get that anymore. You don't. It's like a blow to the innocent. It's a blow to just the age. That's the best way I can explain it, folks. Back to you, Afternoon.
Yeah, you know, when you think about these covers, man, I mean, like Amazing Fantasy 15, obviously. You know, the Ditko book, first introduction of Spider-Man, him swinging with the criminal, Action Number 1 with Superman with the car in his hands over him. Some of someone who's not even into comic books would know these covers. I mean, a cover that is truly iconic is a cover that everyone can recognize. You know, the Fantastic Four number one, where the creature, you know, Mole Man's creature is coming out from the earth, and he's surrounded by the Fantastic Four. I mean, those issues just, I don't know, I don't think we're going to see that anymore. I think it's troubling, definitely troubling. All right, you still have a few minutes left, gentlemen. I want to talk about actually this phenomenon. I don't know how to describe it. I mean, I guess it's kind of wacky slash interesting. Have you heard about this deal with Japanese schoolgirls? I guess mimicking Street Fighter and Dragon Ball Z moves.
Damn,
it's called Hadoukening.
It's in my latest blog. I have it up on Facebook. Eventually, it'll be up on the site. And
yes,
and I went. There's two forces of it. That and Star Wars fans have responded with Vadering.
The Force. Right.
Yeah, using the Force choke into doing that. And it's like I tell people all the time. All right, if you want to do it, the technology is out there to do it now, feasibly. All right, you want to see it? Don't say, I can't do this, because Japanese schoolgirls are doing this. Normal dudes are doing this. All right, you love something so much, you want to make your own mark on the art and everything? Hey, you got a camera? Get inventive. Hey, I'm still trying to figure out how they were able to do the Force choke thing, all right, without showing you the wires. Or without showing you, you know, because you can see the shadows on the floor. I got a feeling I know how the Japanese schoolgirls did the Hayuken so well, where it looks like, you know, like a Force blow throwing you backwards. I have a feeling I know how they took it. But if you look at the pictures, they are so intricate that they must have prepped for this for weeks, because it's almost perfect. That isn't a, let's just do this one day and then jump and, I caught you. No. Everybody's all in the same row. Everybody's timing is perfect. Hell. Like I said, these guys can do this, and I can't get a Judas Contract animated movie. What the hell? Back to you, Afro Nerd.
Is it safe to say that Japan is the geek motherland? Because that's the only place where, I don't want to say the only place, but it appears culturally they are obsessed with making some of their pop culture creations into reality. It's one of the places that you will actually see a life-size or full-size Gundam robot. You know, there's certain things they will do you know, they have they're actually making androids over there, female androids, which I can appreciate. They're doing this stuff. So I guess it really wouldn't be surprising that you'd see schoolgirls that are actually trying to do Dragon Ball Z moves, and the fact that they're sending them via Instagram and tweeting them out. And I'm with Daryl. I don't know how the hell they're doing it, folks. I mean, you're literally seeing not from like one or two people now. You're seeing groups of people floating in the air. You see the force. You get the impression that they're literally being pulled back as if they were struck with one of these chi moves. So I think it's cool. It's just it does bring up what you just said, Daryl.
Yeah,
the common man is able to do this stuff. What's going to happen? What's happening with the people that are supposed to be making this stuff,
yeah,
the entertainment people?
The one that I want Captain Kirk to take a look at, and I don't know how they did it. It's amazing. Is there's this scene in the classroom, and you literally see the one girl do a force blast, all right? Nothing from the hands, force blast. And the other girl is literally parallel to the floor in the air, literally looks like you're trying to take a picture of a speeding car. That's how fast it looks like she's flying backwards. I know Cap's got people in the movie industry and stuff like that, but to capture that at that perfect moment, my hat's off to these girls, man, because that's just amazing stuff.
One more thing. We got about 2 minutes remaining, gentlemen, before we go next door for the AfroNerd radio show. And we will be interviewing again, welcoming back for round two, Sebastian Elkaby, former hip-hop publicist, as well as writer and educator, talking about a hip-hop petition to root out the minstrelsy. So you know he will be an esteemed guest. Anyway, there's this controversy, Darryl, I don't know if you know about it, with the new or next incarnation for the Xbox. I guess it's Xbox 720. I don't know what the formal name will be. But they're saying that it looks like it might be an all-internet deal. That the idea, you know, most of these consoles didn't necessarily rely on internet connectivity. You know, it was an option. Now they're saying that you have to have internet connection in order to play this thing. Do you think that's probably going to be what the deal is, or are they leaving people out? I mean, you know, folks that might, certain areas, not everyone has broadband, believe it or not, even in this day and age, not everyone has that. They should still be able to play this game. Now it's looking like it might be some kind of, you know, some kind of controversy with that.
Well, Cap already knows where I'm going to go with this. My two major things with this, hey, it's free enterprise, you could do it. But, A, do I keep what I buy? Like, say your server goes down, will I still have the game on my console? All right? Are you going to do like Marvel? Are you going to do like thing where your thing goes down and my purchase goes down with it? That's A, because remember, games are costing 50, 60, 70, 80 bucks now. So if I'm paying for it to play online, I better have my game. And two, what's the security like? If I'm giving my financial information over the internet to pick up your game, you better double and triple check your security. Got that, Microsoft? Got that, Sony? Back to you, AfroNerd.
All right. Listen, we got to go next door. No more time left, gentlemen. It's been real. Daryl, I'll make sure you get an earlier email, but I think we're going to be doing Saturdays from now on.
All right.
Listen, folks, you know how it works. We'll do it again on Saturday. Wednesday, coming up, we have Rolanda Watts, but now we have Sebastian Elkaby. It's been real, gentlemen. We're going next door.
All right.
Spock with a beard?
I think not.
Anybody know who Willie Lynch was? Anybody? Raise your hand. No one? He was a vicious slave owner in the West Indies. The slave masters in the colony of Virginia were having trouble controlling their slaves, so they sent for Mr. Lynch to teach them his methods. The word lynching came from his last name. His methods were very simple, but they were diabolical. Keep the slave physically strong, but psychologically weak and dependent on the slave master. Keep the body, take the mind. I and every other professor on this campus are here to help you to find, take back, and keep your righteous mind. Because obviously, you have lost it.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Fork, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man, what is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor. All hail funk and lesson. Sweet tongue, grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in a cosmos where no time and space do exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos. Mortals label me as a locker.
You're traveling to another radio show. A broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, D-Bird, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
Hey, folks. Good evening. Listen, this is part two, Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk, a.k.a. Afternoon Radio. The Grindhouse Show, where we do a double-duty deal. The last show, of course, was the Comic Shop. Now we have Afternoon. The call-in number, 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. We're expecting former hip-hop publicist, educator, writer, blogger, Sebastian Elkaby. Definitely a I would consider a hip-hop activist. Trying to save this culture, trying to save it. So, he was on before. We have him back again. Definitely an insightful guest, has a lot to say. And he's one of the major forces behind a new petition in trying to bring back quality hip-hop. So you know Team Afro-Nerd is going to speak to a gentleman that is trying to root out the minstrelsy. So, he's going to talk about that. Talk about hip-hop, and I'm sure he has a lot to say about what's been happening in the last few weeks, whether it's Lil Wayne or Rick Ross, those foolish gentlemen. Folks, it's going to be a hot show. Before we get to the discourse, let's get to a quick groove. This is I Believe, Q-Tip D'Angelo. We'll be right back. Let's groove.
I believe, yeah.
I believe, just love. I believe, just love. I believe, just love. I believe, just love.
When you give back for what you receive, you know. When you hold me down and made me believe, you know. When you see, oh, she let you go, you know. And when we say ho, y'all say ho. Don't think about it when my back is turned. I know you're right there for me and I won't get burned. Love shows itself in so many ways that we sometimes overlook it in the course of a day. Don't be mad, girl, you used to be sad, girl. But now that we got this, forget what we had, girl. And see the forest from the trees. It's not windy, it's just the breeze, you know.
I believe, just love. I believe, just love. I believe.
you move to this. And you know, when you're famous bed and they rest their head. And you know, and bring them home now, that's what we said. I'm on your stereo, and I'm in your video, and I'm gonna put the heat on a non-stop stream. I really can't stop, but I hit y'all with a drop. Hey y'all, this is Tip on W.E. Dream. W-E-D-R-E-M. Request this and show love to me, fam. Shouting out Tokyo Mike and his schoolgirls over there in Japan doing the Hadoukening. You know what the kids are doing nowadays, Captain? Captain, listen. I know you're in Rigel 4, but you need it down here because the minstrels are attacking. Captain, it's your time. Let's get to it.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before.
I have donned my lantern ring, and I'm using the red lantern ring. Okay? Because I'm angry right now. Yes.
For rage?
Yes. All right? That's what I'm using right now. We're going with the red to root out all the whackness, the skill lackness, the skills that are very tacky, shameful, the Chief Keefs, the Rocky ASAPs. But let me stop there.
That's a good question. We need to have that as a topic for the next show on Comic Shop. Which ring would you get? Or which ring will most identify you? You know, with the spectrum of rings. I mean, there's a spectrum.
Yes, there's a spectrum.
I would probably be the orange ring. For green. I like to think I'd be a green will guy. I'd like to think I'd have a green ring, but I think I'd probably be, I don't know, you know what? I might have all those rings for some reason.
I would think I'm good with green and the red. Those two. Those two would be very good. Not the other ones. You know? Those two I'd be excellent with.
Listen, folks, we are waiting with bated breath. I did contact Mr. Elkaby behind the scenes last night. So hopefully, worst case scenario, I'll just buzz him in. But also, there's other things we have to get into discussion as well. You heard about the deal with the president having to apologize because of him referring to the California Attorney General as the most – what did he say exactly? I think he said
most attractive.
The best looking. So we'll talk about that also. Actually,
I can't speak your mind. You can't speak your mind at all.
You know what? Listen. First of all, she is fine. she is fine, but you can't say it.
You can't say it.
I know. They got rid of me right away. Okay. I think our friend is actually here. I see him out the window wearing a Save Hip Hop T-shirt. Get rid of the minstrels. I think is in the back of it. So anyway. Let me just go closer to the door. I think someone is coming up.
Hello, hello.
Sebastian.
Yes, sir.
Welcome to Afro Radio again, sir.
Thank you. Thank you for having me again.
No problemo. Listen. I'm always getting your email, sir, and I feel your pain. Last time we spoke, I thought there was a kindred spirit between us because we
Indeed.
want
I think we want 1989 to come back. I think we do. Seriously, that might be a problem. You know, that's when things made sense. That's when things made sense. When I go to YouTube, and I do, I go to YouTube and I look through. Okay, what did I look at recently? J. Rue the Damager. And you look at that, and you say, "Wow, that makes sense." Or poor righteous teachers, that makes sense. And then you go to 2013 and you look at Chief Keef. That doesn't make any sense.
I'm sorry,
it doesn't. So listen, whatever you need us to do, we are on board. We're at your disposal, sir. Tell us what's going on with this this petition to bring back conscious hip hop. What are we trying to do here?
Right. Well, it's not necessarily just to bring back conscious hip hop. It's really to try to get mainstream the mainstream record industry, and we're kind of targeting Def Jam and Interscope and those radio those record companies. It's trying to get them to give an equal amount of time to more progressive artists.
Okay.
We're not asking for any kind of ban or anything like that. You know, it's not in our power to do so. But we believe that we have enough people who are sick and tired of the same old nonsense being promoted on the radio and signed by record labels. So we want some balance. We feel that for every artist signed to a record company or every artist played on a radio station that has what I'm simply and broadly going to call negative content, we feel that radio stations and record companies should give an equal amount of time to more progressive and more positive, conscientious, whatever you want to call them, just better quality artists, you know, so that we can establish a balance, the balance that we experienced, the balance that we were there to see in the golden age and, you know, in the late 80s and early 90s, when you could listen to Public Enemy and you could also listen to Too Short if that was your thing. Or you could listen to X-Clan and you could listen to NWA if that was your thing. You know? So we're asking for balance. That's what we want. And we know that from a marketing standpoint, there are millions of people here in the United States alone, let's not even count the rest of the world, who would gladly become consumers of better hip-hop, which is ultimately what record companies are interested in, the bottom line, money. So we're telling them, hey, through this petition, we have enough people signing the petition, letting you know that they're willing to put dollars behind quality artists. That's really what it's all about.
Now, you know, I joined your Twitter page. I should have joined it a long time ago, but I'm still I don't use Twitter as much as I should, but I use Twitter somewhat often, so I joined your Twitter account.
Mm-hmm.
And
you mean my Twitter account that has like 3 followers?
Yeah. Well, we're going to work on getting that. Bolstered. Trust
me,
it takes work.
That's the problem. You're telling the truth. Yeah.
It takes. Well, yeah. Well, listen. The truth is unattractive. Let me give that note to our friend Mr. Starks. The truth is unattractive. But we're going to help you with that. We're going to try to bolster your numbers. But there was also something on there about a local station, New York, Power 105.1. Is there some kind of – explain that with trying to ban some records with the two guys at the moment, Lil Wayne?
Yeah. So here's the deal. I'm part of a collective of activists and organizers, a national collective, which was really put together – by Paul Porter, who's the founder of RapRehab.com and Industry Ears. So under his guidance, I'm pretty sure he wouldn't even want me to call it that, but he did kind of pull us all together. You know, we're going against, like I said, the industry radio stations, but right now Rick Ross is really this launching pad for us, you know, following the craziness of Rick Ross's drug rape references in the song that was released last month, but actually caught the public's attention just a couple of weeks ago. You know, because there's a public outcry, there's a national outrage, you know, and we see that this is a good opportunity to use this momentum to place focus on Rick Ross, but again, holding the entire mainstream media accountable. So the whole thing with Power 105, they're actually sponsoring Rick Ross. Rick Ross has a concert April 12th in New York. They're sponsoring the concert. Rick Ross is on the headliner along with Waka Flocka and French Montana. A concert
man.
You couldn't that you
lineup
couldn't pay
that lineup
to go
sucks,
see.
Man.
Oh
I mean,
man, you couldn't pay me to see that concert. I mean, I don't know what kind of frame of mind you'd have to be in to look forward to such such craziness.
Tribe opens up for Prince at the Southwest tour in Texas a few weeks ago. That to me is like iconic. And then we're talking about French Montana. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm dating myself, but it just sounds crazy that anybody would want to see these clowns.
No, it is crazy. That's the thing. It is crazy. It's not even about dating ourselves. You know, common sense has no age, you know, or it shouldn't have an age.
I agree with you.
So it's not even really about dating ourselves. It's, you know, common sense was real and important and applicable during the golden age as it is now. You know, we haven't lost our minds. It seems that many others have. We haven't lost our minds. So this lineup, headlined by Rick Ross, is something that we're addressing right now. We're actually going to have a few organizers who are going to protest the concert. But in the meantime, we've been gathering people to call Power 105 and to ask them why they're even promoting this alleged lyrical rapist, you know?
It's funny you mention Mr. Porter, because I was about to mention Lisa Steger to you. I was about to mention it, and you went right. You were thinking simpatico, because we've interviewed them. I got to get back to her and Mr. Porter, but for folks who are unfamiliar, industry ears, these two folks, Lisa Fager, Paul Porter, they're behind really trying to root out some of the stuff that's and with record companies and radio stations. I mean, even maybe now, I guess 10 years ago, it goes back quite a bit now. They were instrumental in getting rid of, I think, wasn't there something on Hot 97 where they had girls slapping each other? A slap contest?
Yeah. That was. I think that was less than 10 years ago, actually.
Yeah, it might have been less than 10 years ago. Maybe, I don't know, you'd be surprised. That might have been 04, 05, yeah, something like that. But it goes to show you how far we can go back to the disrespect, and it just keeps on happening.
Right, exactly.
But I agree with you. I don't want to come off like I'm a complete hater in the sense of, you know what? We've been unsuccessful to get rid of pornography. People would say, oh, well, you know, we can't get rid of pornography because they're just there. I've accepted that some people are going to make the kind of music they're going to make, and that's okay. But like you said before, and I said this too, there is censorship on the other side. I want you to talk about
all
that.
All the way.
Why aren't we looking at it that way? This is clearly censorship on the other side. Go into that a little
bit. Well, okay. You know, you and I and like-minded individuals, I'm sure, have all been labeled as haters and people who support censorship because we want to eliminate all of this mainstream nonsense that's on their airwaves. You know, but the thing I always tell people, I'm not for censorship. I'm actually for balance. It's the industry, record companies and radio stations, who support censorship by not providing that balance. It is the music industry that only allows the same few artists with the same messages to be heard. That's censorship. It's censorship when Kendrick Lamar, who actually had one of the top-selling hip-hop albums of 2012, you know, who does, you know, kind of flirt between conscious lyrics and more, you know, more negative content,
they're
you
more
know.
The same.
But he had a successful album for 2012. You know, you would think that would be an indication that maybe people are more open to have more creative, more thought-provoking artists, you know, but apparently not. So I'm thinking maybe there's an agenda. Maybe it's not just supply and demand. Maybe it's deeper than that. I mean, after all, and this is something that I'm going to be addressing in an article that I'll be releasing this coming week. You know, when you look at the FCC and FCC regulations, which I've been doing for the past 3-4 days, really kind of studying those regulations. As it stands now, all radio stations, well, all broadcasters, but specifically radio stations, are violating FCC regulations by obscene content alone. So, you know, my thing is, why are radio stations allowed to violate their FCC regulations based on the content that they play, yet they ban or censor certain artists and certain lyrics when it's in their best interest? I'll give you an example, and we're gonna go back a little bit on this. I don't know if you remember, but when Diddy came out with "It's All About the Benjamins,"
oh yeah, of course.
There's a lyric. It says, you should do what we do, stack chips like Hebrews. Now, Hebrew was censored. Clive Davis wasn't having it. That was censored. When Kanye West, in the song All Falls Down, I think on the third verse, the last verse, he says something, and I paraphrase, and the white man gets paid from all of that. Well, the word white man was censored, taken out, okay? And we go a few years back when Michael Jackson came out with They Don't Really Care About Us. I don't know if that's the title of the song, but where he's using different ethnic and racial slurs to make a point about racism and discrimination, but he was using the slurs to make that point.
Right.
When he mentioned... or he used a racial slur to talk about Jews, again, simply to illustrate the stupidity of discrimination, but he used the slur. Well, he wasn't allowed to do that. He had to re-record the song, and as great of an entertainer and as powerful as Michael Jackson was, he couldn't even use that word. So why does censorship work when it's offensive to a certain group of people, but it's perfectly okay when black women and black men are being disrespected in the media constantly, and there's no one who's really there to enforce the rules when need be?
Wow. Wow. Captain, what are your thoughts on this, man? Captain, I know you have stuff to say.
Well, it seems that there is an agenda based on what you said there. It seems more or less they're not allowed to evolve the consciousness in any way, shape, or form. You only can devolve the individual, and that's okay.
Exactly.
If it's anything that's going to raise awareness, it has to be blocked. Now, here's the thing, all right? Let's say you get on the platform, and they start spinning, you know, different records, more conscious records, more talented artists. What does the public do in your opinion? I know I have my opinion. I think the public automatically pushes a lot of these other artists out of the way because now they're exposed to a much better music. Now, occasionally there'll be a good record here and there that you just you play in the club and everything else everyone will like, the Simple Dumb record.
Right.
But it seems like once individuals are exposed to what real rap is and everything else on the platform of, let's say, you know, radio, like a 105.1 or a Hot 97, it would seem to me that these other artists, these minstrels, would be pushed out of the way. What do you think about that?
I think they would be pushed out of the way because, first of all, it's pretty clear now that people are you know, want something new. People are expecting something more progressive. So I think there's a demand for it. And at the same time, you know, these young heads who support Chief Keef and Trinidad James and, you know, all of these clowns, the only reason why they do that is because that's all they're offered. They're not really exposed to an alternative. But if they are exposed to an alternative, and really at the end of the day, if the beat is dope, then people are open to it. You know, I work with students. That's you know, that's pretty much my 9-to-5. I work with students, middle school students and high school students. I run a hip-hop culture program, an educational hip-hop culture program. You know, and my students, 13, 14, 15-year-olds, will tell you, all of these artists like Chief Keef and Trinidad James, the beats are tight, but when it comes to real lyricists, we don't consider those artists real lyricists. So even they know that. Even they recognize that. You know, they just don't have access to it as much as we used to back in the days. And, you know, and that's really what it comes down to. If you give them access to it, if you put it in front of them, then they're going to gravitate to it. I mean, I think it's just a natural thing. I don't know if that answers your question, but.
Oh, most definitely. Listen, Sebastian, I'm going to go to a quick groove. You know, we do try to expose people to music while we have the ability, even on the Internet.
When we
come back, I know your time is valuable. When we come back, I'm going to ask you a few more questions, most importantly, how people can join this petition and what they need to do. So let's go to a quick groove. And then we got to get some information from you as to what we need to do to get this balance thing going on, because it is imperative. All right.
Cool.
Folks, let's check out Janelle Monáe. Janelle Monáe featuring Saul Williams, who also has a hip-hop history. We'll be back in a few moments. This is Janelle, Saul, Dance or Die. Dance or Die. We'll be right back. Let's groove.
Cyborg, Android, D-boy, Decoy, Water, Wisdom, Vision, insight, stronghold, partner, ice cold, mystery, solar.
Some will pull the gun because they want to be solved. Snatching up your life into the blink of an eye. And if you see your clone on the street walking by, keep it running from your life because only one will survive. Wars in the streets and listen out for an eye. Run on for your life or you can know she can die. She's praying and listening up to the life in the ride. If you stick up, then the pick up, pick up. Tell them lies and tell them lies and put your face on fire. Run and take it from the never dream, never wait. Killing kids in the kitchen, the army. Rising in the west, and yes, here comes the sun. Marching to the room with the kick of the drum. The wildest in me, and they got the bombs and the guns. So you might as well keep dancing if you're not gonna run.
Okay, we're back. Believe it or not, it actually does end that abruptly. That is Dance or Die, Saul Williams, Janelle Monáe. And that goes back to the problem is that Janelle Monáe is cute as a button. She's clean, great representation, a phenomenal act. I've seen her live on a few occasions. And they don't know, she's moderately successful, but they don't know what to do with her. In this landscape, she's not, you know, she's not smoking blunts on a beach with a bikini like Rihanna. So, I mean, although, you know, I don't mind looking at Rihanna either, but still, I mean, there's got to be a place for balance. And I'm thinking, Sebastian, in all fairness now, I think that even if you go back in the early 90s, late 80s, because there was balance, you could actually digest the minstrel stuff a little better. Two Live Crew could coexist with Public Enemy, and I was able to, I didn't see the bottom of me as much. You know, I remember there was a lot of fools back then, but it didn't matter because you had a whole plethora of quality acts, and it's all Two Live Crew today now, I think.
Right, exactly. That's the issue. And back then, I definitely don't want to sound like the, you know, back then kind of old man, but back then you weren't really, you know, you felt no guilt saying that you could listen to Poor Righteous Teachers and listen to Two Live Crew at the same time. You know, it necessarily wasn't a reflection of your mental state. Whereas today, if somebody tells you they're listening to Chief Keef, you know, it's usually indicative of another type of issue, a personal issue, you know, because it really makes up the whole of what that person is usually listening to. It's really rare for somebody today, you know, a 14-year-old, a 15-year-old, to you know, to have diverse tastes when they don't have the exposure to it.
Yeah, I think you're more of a complete individual. I mean, listen, I'm a big Prince fan, and before he became holier than thou today, he was, you know, his royal badness. I mean, this guy was pretty risque.
But definitely not just musically, but visually as well. I mean, who else was wearing the kind of clothes that would expose your butt cheeks, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I just remember, you need to think about it, Doggy Style is, what, 20 years old now? Is that, am I correct on that?
Who's that?
Doggy Style, the seminal Snoop Dogg record.
20 years old, yeah. It came out in 93, yep.
Wow, I mean, 20 years old, and that record is, I mean, you know, I guess it stands up to anything played today as far as, you know, it's a lot of vulgar, you know, of anything, smoking indo. I mean, but
yeah,
I bought the record.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not going to lie.
Well,
I mean, maybe the production was so on point. I don't know. I mean, that's another thing. What happens if the youth come back and say, well, look, you know, they pull up these records and say, well, what's the difference between Doggy Style and what Chief Keef is doing besides production and lyrical content?
Well, you know, here's what's interesting. Doggy Style and The Chronic represent a new chapter in hip-hop and in the industry, you know. Snoop and Dre really signaled or ushered in the gangster rap era. Yeah, no, we had it with N.W.A. prior to that, you know. But, you know, The Chronic and Doggy Style were able to bring in a whole new wave of lyrical content and of rappers that really became one-dimensional, you know. You know, we had our so-called gangsters back then. I mean, Schooly D even, you know, if you want to take it back a little further. You know, but again, the balance allowed us to simply take somebody like Schooly D or even somebody like Just Ice, who called himself a hip-hop gangster, you know, or N.W.A., you know, or M.C.A., you know, Compton's Most Wanted. It allowed us to look at those artists as standalone artists. That's what they do. And that's it. They don't necessarily represent an entire movement, whereas Snoop and Dre ushered in an entire movement, and as a result, the industry capitalized on that and that alone. I mean, you know, we were fortunate to still have your Wu-Tangs and your Digable Planets and people who also came out, you know, at around that time and a little after. But, you know, that movement was definitely being eclipsed by what, you know, so-called gangster rap was doing.
And, you know, it's funny you mentioned Just Ice, and, you know, he had his infamous grill way before Paul Wall. And I'm looking, wait, you know, again, but way before Paul Wall, and I just saw the recent cover, I think it might have been a Double XL, that has ASAP Rocky on the cover showing his teeth like a slave, dare I say, which, you know, it's a little disconcerting to see a black person showing the grill. That's all you see is his mouth and his gold teeth. But then, like you said, Just Ice did it in 86. So, wow. I don't know.
Right. And you know, and it's all about context, and it's all about balance. I mean, you know, risque videos and obscene, vulgar lyrics have always been around. I mean, you know, forget hip-hop. Let's just take it back to Rudy Ray Moore. You know, let's take it back to Richard Pryor. I mean, we can take it back. I mean, we can take it back to the blues, you know?
Yeah, you're right.
It's always been around. You know, the problem is when there's no balance.
Yeah, it wasn't the totality of it all. Now tell us what we need to do to help you, because tell us where to go to the petition. Is it still affiliated with change.org? How would we go about having our listeners sign this petition?
Yeah. The petition is on change.org. That's the platform that we're using. But so you can go to change.org and look up Rape, Rick Ross, and Responsibility. That's the name of the of the petition. Or you can also go to raprehab.com and search the article under the same name, Rape, Rick Ross, and Responsibility. Very straight to the point, very telling. The title alone is, tells the story. Either change.org or raprehab.com.
And what's your next piece? You mentioned you got another one coming. I know you had Confessions of a Failed Hip-Hop Publicist.
Confessions of a Failed Hip-Hop Publicist that came out in January. In February, I released Mainstream Rap, A Pipeline to Prison. In March, I put out a piece that the Griot had asked me to write titled Is Hip-Hop Destroying Black America? They kind of gave me the title, and I wrote something around that. My answer to that question is no, and the article goes into details as to why I say no. And then this article that I'm working on now, which is still untitled, should be coming out this coming week. It will be on Rap Rehab. I think it'll be on the Griot as well. And then we'll see. And I'm writing articles whenever the inspiration hits me. Right now, it seems that I'm doing once a month, and we'll see how it goes down. And I've had some very interesting feedback from all of these articles from people all across the world, as well as industry execs who are getting back at me and calling me a conspiracy theorist and all these interesting labels. Which I will be laughing off in my next article.
So let me get this straight. So, I mean, you have people who are obviously going to support you, but those who are, I guess, they're saying you're lying. I mean, this is pretty obvious. I mean, it is going down that way. I mean, the music is not balanced. I mean, it's not something that can be disputed.
Well, you know, the execs that reach out to me tell me that it's all about, there's no conspiracy, that there's not some type of intentional effort to, hurt people or brainwash people. You know, it's simply supply and demand, and it's, what corporations do. I've had a few conversations with people telling me that corporations are in the business of making money. That's it. Bottom line, they're not in the business of policing morals. They're not in the business of raising our kids. They're simply in the business of making money and shouldn't be held to any other standard or shouldn't be held accountable for anything beyond that, but we can see that it's not true. Example I gave you earlier, proves that they do have concerns and do police morality when it affects groups of people that they're interested in protecting, And we have the FCC. The FCC is created specifically to somehow keep checks and balances when broadcasters are getting a little bit too vulgar or obscene. So there will be no need for an FCC if corporations want to be held to some kind of standard. So anybody who says that... I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, well, you know, Sebastian, I've said this before. You know, if it's all about the money, and we know corporations want to make money, if it is all about the money, then why wouldn't they allow there to be an alternate revenue stream? No one stops Kurt Cobain for being the alternative to the hair band, so why can't we have Immortal Technique and all these other people? Why can't there be an alternative pipeline or alternative financial stream for the hip hop community? So I mean, that doesn't make any sense.
Well, the same mentality, the same kind of consciousness that prevents that from happening, and obviously, you know, has some kind of agenda behind it, is the same type of consciousness that that is impacting education when it comes to black and Latino students. You know, it's the same type of consciousness that's impacting housing and employment when it comes to black and Latino populations. It's the same type of consciousness, corporate consciousness, that's affecting healthcare in in ways that only affect black and Latino communities. There always seems to be that consciousness blocking black and Latino communities from having alternative voices heard, you know. So of course it goes beyond money and beyond supply and demand. There's a mentality that supports that type of thinking.
Wow. Listen, Sebastian, obviously we're going to have you back for round three. we have more topics to discuss this evening, but listen, you're definitely on our team. We're on your team. Anything else comes through, give me a holler, and we'll definitely, you know, promote it, and we're going to sign this petition. Our listeners are going to sign this petition. I hope we can just make this a thing where all of a sudden it creates a wave like, okay, let's straighten this crap out once and for all. That needs
once
to be done.
Once and for all, yep.
You know, once and for all. I'm getting word that this, you would think that the little Wayne fiasco with Emmett Till would have been enough, but I'm hearing that this rape scenario thing with Rick Ross, this might have been the linchpin. This might be the one that says, okay, you know what? We got to straighten this crap out. So we'll see.
Thanks for bringing that up, because a lot of people, I've seen a lot of conversation around the fact that you know, this type of content has been around for a long, long time, and people are saying, well, you know, what's different with Rick Ross? What's different with Lil Wayne? This has been going around for a long, long time, you know, and people haven't been nearly as outraged as they are now. Look, I don't understand, you know, why things happen the way they do, why nature takes the course that it does, but for whatever reason, this particular incident seems to have awakened people more than, you know, previous episodes before. So let's just jump on it, you know. For whatever reason, it's affecting people, and I think we just have to take advantage of it.
Agreed. Sebastian, as always, man, we'll support you. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it, and I will be sending out a next article as soon as it's ready to go.
Sounds good. Folks, that's okay. Sebastian Elkeby. Help him out, change.org. Sign the damn petition. Simple and plain. All right, Sebastian,
yep.
We'll keep in touch behind the scenes, and next thing that comes up, we'll have you back on.
Cool. Thanks for having me. Peace.
Peace. Sounds good. Ladies and gentlemen, again, that was Sebastian Elkeby, former hip-hop publicist, educator, hip-hop activist, and now one of the major forces behind this new change.org petition to bring back conscious hip-hop and, if anything, balance the hip-hop game. I mean, I think it is a, on some level, it is definitely a censorship issue where you're not allowed to hear these alternative acts. I mean, that's just, no one has actually addressed it that way. I wanted to mention something to him before, and this is actually another site that I would implore our listenership to go to, industryears.com. Again, industryears.com. You might even want to go into the archives where we spoke to a Miss Lisa Fager. Dare I say, she's also I don't want to get into trouble by saying she's good, she's attractive as well, the way that Obama did, but I'm not the president, so I can say it. And she's a married woman, so, you know. Anyway, she is definitely one of those women of color that is fighting, has been fighting a fight along with her partner, Paul Porter. Both these individuals, by the way, are radio veterans. And they've been fighting this stuff for a long time. And in History Ears, there's a piece about Kiki Palmer. Now, for those who are familiar with that name, Kiki Palmer is an actress. I think she's a 19, 20, 21 years old. She's a Disney phenom. I believe she had her own show. And her brand is a clean one, simple and plain. Her brand is a clean one. She's a singer. She does youthful music, but she does it in a clean way. So there's a whole deal with her where, you know, she says, listen, we've got to fight the payola thing. She's putting it out there. She shopped her music to all these outlets, and they are outright refusing to play her music. She's talented. She has the Disney brand behind her now. This is where it gets even deeper. She has the Disney brand, but Disney represents a certain kind of cleanliness that may not translate, dare I say, translate to urban radio, unless you pay for it. Her people do not want to pay for the music, and you shouldn't have to pay to play. And also, she was on track to be signed with Jimmy Iovine of Interscope Records, who of course is behind Chief Keef, and she had a parting of the ways with Mr. Iovine because of her not wanting to do a certain type of music, probably wanted to keep her clothes on, and so forth and so forth. And now, the cleanliness, the talent, the Disney, and you can't get played. But if you show your behind, literally, you will get played. And if you pay me, you'll get played. Something is wrong. That's when you know, when Sebastian talked about the corporate structure and about the conspiracy thinking, they have to explain that. It's a conspiracy, or maybe it's not. Maybe it's just outright. They will not play this young woman with the acting resume, the Disney resume, the talent resume, because she does not want to do a disrespectful kind of music. They will not play her. That is what you call censorship. Simple and plain. Captain, your thoughts?
I wholeheartedly agree. They do have to explain exactly what's going on. You know, I think actually, you know, it's really obvious what is going on at this given point. You know, but there's nothing for them really to explain away. I know it seems like I'm talking in a circle, but there's nothing really for them really to explain away. It is obvious what's going on. There's censorship on the other side. It's plain and simple. That's it. Cut it out and let's get going. That's all. Let's put a little balance in there. That's all. And then we can have these other menstrual records, and then we can have this, you know, the progressive stuff. That's all. Let's get it all together and keep moving. But you know what happens, just as I said, Tim? You start having the more progressive records, these other foolishness, whatever agenda you're trying to do with that kind of music starts to get pushed out of the way. You just occasionally get a nice little hot record here and there that you'll jump up and down with at the club, but it will not be the main music that you're listening to. That's what has a tendency to happen, and that begins to change the mind state of the individual. That's all.
Yeah, quickly, we got about 10 minutes remaining, ladies and gentlemen. Again, this is the Grindhouse edition of Afterheard on Saturday. And there's a few other topics I wanted to get to. Maybe we'll get to one or two of them. I'm kind of jumping around a little bit. I want to talk about the president. I guess we could talk about that for about a minute. It's political correctness at its best. He's being critiqued. I think the way the business world works nowadays, professional world works nowadays, you just cannot acknowledge the attractiveness with the genders. I think women can get away with it toward men, but theoretically, that, you know, because I've dealt with this in the corporate area as well. I've dealt with this thing. I've seen videos. I've seen all kinds of things. that they're telling you how you're supposed to conduct yourself, and rightfully so. On some level, you do have to have standards because people can be creepy. Let's be frank about it. In all fairness, people can be creepy and disrespectful, and some folks are not aware of their boundaries. We know that to be true. But there's also things that are natural that aren't meant to have a negative or a creepy intent. And I think this is one of the cases where the president, I understand what's going on here, but I don't think it's a much ado about nothing. You know, we're talking about Kamala Harris, California Attorney General. She is a very attractive woman, a woman of color.
Hey,
I'm not the president, so I can say it. You know, I can say what I see. So, and also, he did not just say she was the best-looking attorney in America, whatever, best-looking. He went into a whole litany. He went into a quasi-resume in talking about her. And she happens to be. He went to, she's got all these accolades. She's a hard worker. She's stick-to-itiveness. She's stalwart. My favorite word, stalwart. She's got all these accolades. And on top of that, she's the best looking. If you want to read into it to be sexist, I don't know, Captain. I think there's got to be some leniency for this stuff. Why are you wearing makeup? Why is your hair put up in a certain fashion? Why are you wearing, why are you wearing perfume? What is that meant to be? What are we doing? Why am I putting cologne on every day, Captain? What am I doing? Getting my hair cut, cologne, shaving, brushing my teeth, working out on occasion. Shouting out Sally V. I'll be there tomorrow. I've been slacking. Yes. Why do I do all these things? What am I doing? Why are we the cosmetic industry? Why is it a multi-billion-dollar industry?
Exactly.
What is that for?
Exactly. They speak with forked tongue, both sides of their mouth. That's the reality of the situation at this given time.
Captain. That's one quick thing. We got to call. Hold on 1 second. Cap, go ahead.
I think that when it comes to the corporate structure, and I know they will not do it, and the president's situation was a little different, but the person that goes today 9 to 5, 7 to 3, 8 to 4, your 10 to 6, whatever your shift may be. Men on one side, women on the other side. Let all the women work together. And a lot of times the women do not want to work with other women because a lot of times, not all women, this is just what some women have told me, a lot of women have, issues. So they like to mix it up at times. Men on one side, women on the other side. Let the men work together. Let the women work on their side. Maybe at lunchtime you get together. And then at the end of the day, you can get together. That's it. That eliminates all the problems. No real interaction. But they don't want to do that. They don't want to do that.
You know, Captain, I'm going to get to this caller quickly, but I have to confess this. I have been sexually harassed. I have been sexually harassed, but I did not know it because I'm a man. I've had women tell me, they talk about whips and chains. I've had a female colleague do something with a banana and smile at me. The Oracle's listening, so I got to be careful. But I'm saying, I'm being honest with you. Now that I think about it, and these things ended up in a certain situation.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, they ended up with a certain result. No one got fired. I say that right now. But I'm saying women can get away with this. Attractive women, mind you. I might have said if they look like I don't know, Quasimodo. I might have yelled harassment. It was just fortunate they looked a certain way. But as I think about it, oh wow, that might be men can't be sexually harassed. I mean, they can, but
we deal with it a lot better. Let's get to the caller though.
Yeah, we got minutes remaining. Caller, welcome to Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk. the Grindhouse Edition. What's up? What do you have to say? 484.
Hey, guys. It's Q-Storm calling.
Q, what's up?
I'll be brief because I know you're about to close shop, but I actually was calling to make a comment about the previous topic. Your guest was alluding to an agenda by the record labels, and I've been in the chat rooms going back and forth with Kavina Man about his allusion to an agenda by these record labels. To me, I'm not buying it. I think the only agenda that a record label has is to make money, make profit, and I put the blame for all of this trash that's out there now squarely on the buying public. That's who's to blame. The record labels are who they are. They're there to make money. If we stop buying it, they'll stop making it.
Well, you know what? I don't disagree with you, but I do find it odd that if you're going to racialize this, and I don't like to, as you know, I don't like to racialize everything. But if you are going to racialize it, it appears that the white buying public, that they are respected, that Maroon 5 is able to do their thing. All these other acts, Jack Black, everyone's able to do their thing. They're able to have all these different types of music. They're able to have love songs, Q. They're still making love songs and looking longingly in other their mates' eyes on wax. What happened to the black folks? There's no love music. There's no female hip-hop artists. Everything
because they're not demanding it. We're not demanding it. Why isn't Janelle Monáe getting played? We're not demanding. We're not buying her records.
But listen, but are the whites demanding that kind of music, or is it considered business as usual? Is it considered normal conditioning? Is it considered normal? We've normalized our dysfunction, and we don't think that there's an alternative.
Exactly. We the buying public. We the black community. Exactly. That's what I'm saying. That's my point.
But it wasn't always like that. What made the change? We had romantic music up the wazoo.
I mean, D-Bert, our socioeconomic status has changed tremendously in the black community since those times. I'm not sure how far back you're going, since the times of Motown or when music was really music. Our state, our status has gotten drastically worse. That's part of the reason.
We go back to the 90s. We don't have to go back that far. You had plenty of R&B acts. You had Guy. You had plenty of acts. I spoke to Mr. Starks about this. You had plenty of romantic R&B acts that you do not see today. And you had at least half a dozen female hip-hop artists. Now you have one.
That goes to show you that a couple generations, how much damage can be done in just a couple generations.
You might have a point. Listen, we've got to table this for Wednesday. Check us out for Rolanda Watts. Maybe we can ask her, because she's going to talk about diversity with black magazines, so that should be pretty interesting. And she's another looker, actually. And she would be. She's on Afternoon Show. Am I going to get sued for that now, Captain? You can't talk about women being attractive. That's over.
It's over. It's over now.
What about that banana that happened to me? What about the banana? What about my assault?
You're a man. You can handle it.
Yeah, I did. Anyway, folks, it's been real. Q, as always, we appreciate your support. We'll be back on Wednesday with Ms. Rolanda Watts. It'll be a very eventful show. And we do what we always do. Any closing remarks, Captain?
Time to go.
Sounds good. Curtis Mayfield, going out of the classic, Superfly. See you on Wednesday. It's been real. Don't let you